Around the year 1610, some 80 years before a small colonial town in what is today Massachusetts, a town known as Salem, would go down in history for being the setting of one of the most famous witch hunts ever, a small village in the north of Spain, more specifically in Navarra, would take center stage for similar reasons. This witch hunt, sometimes known as the Basque Witch Trials, is fairly well known in Spain, partly due to an eccentric account of the subject in a movie by an equally quirky director, Alex de la Iglesia. But it is all but forgotten elsewhere. Nonetheless, this mostly tragic event is noteworthy for a number of reasons, and not just for the ghastly aspects, but other reasons, making it worth our while to learn more about its history and a little more about how these matters were handled. I tell you, it makes for a fascinating story. Anyway, as I was saying, the year is 1608, and Philip III is king of Spain, a country which is basically has reached the height of its vast empire, an empire governing approximately 13% of the world's territory. And yet, in the north of Spain, another matter was gripping that part of the country, and it was a matter that had been affecting much of Europe for quite some time: witchcraft. In fact, we are also talking about the peak years of the European witch hysteria. Many of the worst, largest, and most brutal witch trials and witch hunts took place in those years. The threat of a wave of evil perpetrated by individuals who had delivered themselves to Satan or engaged in practices of the occult, many of which were of a highly sexual nature, was nothing new to Europe. Many individuals, mainly women and children, were pegged for witches since the 14th century. But ever since Pope Innocent VIII, I believe in 1484, declared witchcraft a form of heresy, the impact was both immediate and deadly. On top of that, the publishing of the infamous, or famous, depending on how you look at it, witch manual, Malleus Maleficarum, in Germany in 1486, it basically turned the old continent into a veritable breeding ground, quote-unquote, for alleged witches and warlocks, resulting in madness, paranoia, and senseless trials, and even more senseless deaths. It would seem that Central Europe, especially Germany, was especially sensitive to this menace and carried out the vast majority of persecutions, trials, and executions. The frenzy spilled over into other countries like France, Switzerland, the Netherlands, and England, and even, as we all well know, colonial America. Now, this may come as a surprise to many, but Spain, for the most part, was generally removed from such hysteria. That doesn't mean they didn't have their own share of persecutions, mainly religious in nature. The Spanish tended to go after the converts, that is, the Muslims and the Jews who converted to Christianity. They were very suspicious of those groups. But the sense is that when it came to flying on broomsticks or turning neighbors into newts, they pretty much didn't buy that crap. It is true, or at least it seems that way, that the further north you go in Spain, the more spooky legends you encounter. It probably has something to do with that mountainous, damper, sort of murkier atmosphere that you find along the northern coast of the country. But in this case, the case of the witch trials that I'm telling you about, it is also likely that the proximity of Navarra and the Basque Country to southern France, where other witch trials were taking place at the same time, had a major impact. In other words, Spain was sort of on the fringe of the witch hunt hysteria, but it was not immune to it. As I was saying, there was apparently a witch hunt taking place in the French Basque region of La Porte, where thousands were being accused and tried, and far too many were being executed. People were fleeing the region, and in some cases even before the trials began, for fear of being wrongly implicated by the notorious French judge Pierre de Langres. The French king, Henri IV, had commissioned him with the job of rooting out the dark arts of the region, and it would seem that he was quite effective in carrying out those orders. Now, one of those who had run away apparently came to Zugarramurdi, it's a tough name to pronounce, a village located deep in the Pyrenees on the border between Spain and France. So this was essentially historic Basque territory. The people in those villages and those towns back then would almost assuredly speak almost exclusively Basque and not Spanish. But anyway, the person I was mentioning was a woman named Maria Zimildegui, who was said to be originally from the village before emigrating to France years before. She apparently had been heavily influenced by the stories she had heard over the 10 years while living there, and once back in her hometown, according to some accounts, she even bragged about it. And then she claimed she recognized certain individuals in the town as being witches. And she basically defended herself by saying that she should know, because after all, she had been in a place where witches existed. Now, we can assume that none of these people were in any way involved in flirting with the devil, and there was never any real proof of anything. But that didn't really matter. We are all well aware that when people are somehow persuaded to embrace a belief, it is nearly impossible to convince them otherwise. It's a sad affliction that even affects people today. Did these famous Sabbaths really occur? Not just there, but anywhere? It's been greatly debated, with opinions ranging from there is no proof of anything ever happening, to very rarely, to even they were quite common. So that's a pretty wide range. There are also others who say that they were social gatherings that had nothing to do with the devil, sort of parties where drinks and narcotics taken via special herbs would have an influence on people's behavior, as you can imagine. So basically, these people were somehow kind of tripping, and it was those bad trips that made things get ugly and distorted reality. So who knows? It seems to be a hotly debated subject. Then the usual hysteria took over. People were throwing each other under the bus in an attempt to save themselves. Men, women, children, basically no one was spared. There were stories of Sabbaths celebrated in a nearby cave, in satanic gatherings in a field known as Acalare, which translates from the Basque as Field of the He-Goat, orgies, bacchanal rages, all the usual stuff associated with the occult. At one point, as many as 50 or a little over 50 residents of the mountain town of 200 were identified and accused. They all pretty much confessed, asked for forgiveness, which was granted, and it seems as if the whole episode could be put behind them. But unfortunately, that was not the case. The local religious authority, the abbot of the monastery of Urdax, which was right nearby, learned of the situation and was alarmed. He contacted the authorities in Logroño to deal with it. Logroño stands today as the capital of the region La Rioja, the heart of the great wine country. Back then, it had jurisdiction over Navarra. They needed to have a specialist look into the rumors. Who was in charge of such matters? None other than the Inquisition, the one and only Inquisition, or we might as well say the Spanish Inquisition, because that's what people think of when they hear the word, even though essentially every other country in Europe at the time had its own version of the Inquisition, and when they separated from the Catholic Church, continued to persecute undesirables under different names. So it was basically the same old story, the same old people, just a new name. So we know that Spain got the bad reputation, but it's a very misleading bad reputation. We'll have to talk about that at a different time. The investigators, the inquisitors, Alonso de Becerra and Juan de Valle Alvarado, went out to find out what was going on. And they went to the town of Zugarramurdi in January of 1609, and in no time compiled a list of suspects. Those suspects were escorted to Logroño for further questioning. Eventually, 29 were convicted and in theory condemned. Not everyone in the investigating commission felt the same way. There was a junior inquisitor by the name of Alonso Salazar y Frias, who had a different take on the process and questioned the guilt of at least one woman. But unfortunately, it was not a good ending for many. On November 8th, 1610, the convicted individuals were presented to a crowd of some 30,000 in the city of Logroño for an auto de fe, which is an act in which those who were convicted could admit their guilt and ask for clemency. Sometimes it was given. Of the 29 people here, the majority did that, but 11 didn't. To be fair, 5 could not pronounce either way because they were already dead. They had passed away in prison officially as a result of an epidemic, though it has been suggested by more than one expert that prison life and quite possibly torture were the real reasons. Their remains were taken out of the coffin and their images burned in effigy. And then you had the other 6 who failed to admit their guilt and were executed. They were burned at the stake. On a side note, it's interesting to realize that even though the Inquisition organized the event and was in charge of investigating and recommending a death sentence, the church had no legal right to carry out the penalty. That was left up to the secular branch and the government, which normally abided, but not always. In any event, after that date, the trials were put on hold. The Supreme Council in Madrid requested an inquiry be conducted into the whole matter in search of more evidence. This Supreme Council was starting to have second thoughts about the whole process. They really weren't, apparently at least, in favor of the auto de fe and the executions, but they carried them out anyway. Still, as we know, the church in Spain was always very skeptical of witchcraft and sought more convincing proof. They also looked for a dispassionate person to carry it out, not the kind who had already believed in that hocus pocus like the first two ones, Valle Alvarado and Alonso de Becerra, who were very gung-ho on finding witches. They ordered the man that we mentioned before, who was sort of suspicious of everything, Alonso Salazar, who by that time had serious doubts about the culpability of any one of the convicted, and they asked him to review the cases and prepare a report. If you think about it, this holy institution was actually reviewing the process. They were basically performing a measure of judicial oversight to make sure that everything was being done correctly and the accusations were backed with proof, not just hearsay. So I find that to be interesting. Salazar went out to the countryside and to the towns and other cities and compiled endless numbers of confessions and performed all these interviews and produced a total of some 1,800 confessions, of which 1,400 were from children. As many as 7,000 people in all had been accused at one point, a ridiculously high number, but it was what it was. The truly interesting part of the report that Salazar prepared and handed in many ways, is the way in which he disproves the veracity of the witch cult. Many had confessed under torture or threat of torture. Others did so in an attempt to be pardoned. They figured if they, you know, gave themselves up, it would be better down the road. They also freely implicated others as a way of gaining favor with the local authorities, or did so as a way of bribing others, getting revenge on their enemies, or just plain screwing over their neighbors. He deemed most stories to be false and ridiculous. He even disproved the claim that witches could fly, attributing their behavior to ointments and hallucinogens. Basically, he approached the whole investigation by way of reason. And he concluded that the church had made a mistake and that the church owed an apology to the victims. And the church actually did that. They followed through on his recommendation. Salazar was a fascinating man, ahead of his time in many ways, if you ask me, at least in the ways of dealing with witchcraft, and it's sort of a shred of proof that the Inquisition was not always this gross, sort of sadistic organization that would chase irrational fears of heresy. Don't get me wrong, there's plenty to criticize the Inquisition about, but it's certainly striking how realistic they were, at least in this case. They didn't want to go for all that, oh, that mystical stuff that didn't really make any sense and there was no proof of anything. They actually just wanted the facts, you know, the straight facts. Anyway, in 1614, the trials came to an official end and things slowly returned to normal. Now, because they were such an anomaly, because witches and witch hunts were so rare in Spain, because the final tally of victims compared to the number of accused was relatively small, because the vast majority were left without any punishment, the trials have been largely forgotten these days, especially on an international level. On the other hand, they have been kept alive in Spain thanks to a number of films on the subject and books on the subject, and also the fact that the people of Zugarramurdi themselves have endeavored to keep the memory alive. In some ways, this might be a tribute to those who perished and suffered, but you sort of get the feeling that it's the witch factor that seems to attract tourists the most. Visitors can walk a kilometer to the cave where the Sabbaths allegedly took place. And as I mentioned, the field that's nearby, the Alcalarre, became so famous that the word is now a part of Spanish. Means that, just that, a witch's Sabbath. There's a famous painting by Goya, which shows a large masculine figure with the goat's head and enormous curving horns, curving upwards, surrounded by a group of followers, I'd say. And the painting's called Alcalarre. So if you want to get an idea of what we're talking about, go check out that painting. There's also a museum in the town, a modest display of local history mixed in with a bit about the trials. And every June, there's a festival devoted to the summer solstice. So in their own quirky way, the townspeople are keeping alive this tragic moment in the past. And of course, this is something that we shouldn't forget. But as I said a few minutes ago, I think it was the report by Salazar, the guy who basically put an end to the witch trials and his rationale, his thinking. He would say things like, just because a person is accused of being a witch does not mean they are a witch. Or just because a person confesses to being a witch doesn't mean necessarily that they are a witch. Now, this may seem like a duh moment. It was obvious, but it wasn't that obvious to everyone. And Salazar really proved that there was something more to this, and he stands tall in history as a person who used common sense above irrational thinking. And he definitely deserves our attention. So anyway, that'll be all for today. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us with any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, click on our PayPal donate button. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto. America. America. America.